warned you.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Okay, this is, you'll forgive my lack of voice, but we're going to, since most of it's on the screen anyway, the fact that I have laryngitis should not interfere too much. Grab a source page. This is a unique series of classes. It's not a shiur in the laws of Kiddush HaChodesh or the laws of or in Tanakh or in some text. This is really a series of classes designed to help us understand the mechanics of the Hebrew calendar. So just to clarify what this course is and what this course is not, it's not about the holidays of the calendar and what they mean and what they represent, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, Pesach, and Shavuot. That's a different course, that's a different conversation. This is literally about the calendar. And we are going to spend 6 weeks talking about the calendar. You'll ask, what is there to talk about? What is there to talk about for 6 weeks on the calendar? That's what we're going to find out. The Hebrew calendar sounds relatively straightforward and simple. Once you start digging a little bit beneath the surface, you find that it's a lot more mysterious than we think. And in the end, it's actually simpler than we think, but the mechanics of it are something that's worthwhile studying, understanding. We're going to do a little bit of math in this class, nothing more than addition and subtraction. And a little bit of whole integer division, so don't have to get too frightened by it. This is a bibliography. You have all the slides in front of you on the source page. This is a bibliography from which I built this course. Most of it is in this first text, Understanding the Jewish Calendar, by Rabbi Nathan Bushwick. If you want to know more about him, you can ask Jerry. Jerry is Mechutin, so interesting guy. This book was written by Professor Leo Levy. Professor Leo Levy was the director of Machon Lev when I went to Machon Lev, which is how I first met him. He wrote a very interesting book. It came out in different titles. Originally it was called Jewish Chrononomy. It was called Halachic Times for Home and Travel. The Comprehensive Hebrew Calendar is the 200-year calendar that Feldheim publishes. As in the beginning, about a 15-page overview of the mechanics of the calendar, and the rest of it are various resources that I turn to at some point or another to put this together. You're welcome to peruse them. Why a course in the calendar? The why is very simple. Because Suhuma Romenechem Uru'u Mi Bara Ela Hamotzi Bimisparts Va'am Lechulam Lechulam B'Shem Yikra. Lift up your eyes and see who has created the heavens, he who brings out their host by number, calling them by name, by the greatness of his might, and because he is strong in power, not one is missing. Very powerful pasuk in Yeshayahu, which basically in short means, the more we understand the way the world works, the more we can wonder at the greatness of Ribbono Shel Olam and his creation. The calendar is man-made. The calendar reflects an understanding of the patterns of the sun and the moon and the stars and the patterns of the cosmos and our role in it and how we make sense of it. And so I think that there's a great deal of spirituality to be gained through an understanding of the calendar. But this course, again, is about the mechanics of the calendar. So we're going to get right into it. The course is essentially divided into six presentations or six lectures. However, they are divided we're going to start with basic terms and definitions. Simple terms, but you'll see very quickly, they need to be defined because some terms that we're familiar with from science and astronomy are different when we look at them halachically. So we're going to take a look at terms and definitions. We're going to start with the discussion of the leap year cycle. We all know what the Jewish leap year is and how it works, more or less. Right? Jewish leap year cycle is how many years are a leap? How often does a leap year come?
3 or 4 years?
7 out of 19? Every other year? Every third year? All right, so we have what to
something like that.
So we have what to learn. So we have what to learn. All this, the leap year cycle is often referred to as Machzor HaKatan. The smaller cycle is a larger cycle called the Machzor HaGadol, which is about Birkas HaChama. It's a separate subject for another time. We're going to talk about how the calendar is set up, months, days of months, structure of the calendar, and what the calendar looks like in practical terms. So all the theory is going to turn into practice. But more importantly, we're going to get to this. And if there is a part of this course that is a little bit complex, this is it. It's called the Dchiyot. It's the mechanics built into the calendar to make sure that the holidays fall on certain days and not on others. And how that mechanics work, we're familiar with phrases like Lo Adurosh, Rosh Hashanah can't fall on Sunday, Wednesday, or Friday, but it's much more complicated than that. We're going to talk a little bit about those Dchiyot, what they mean. That's probably the more complex piece of this. Certainly for me, maybe for you it'll be simpler. But again, no math beyond 3-digit addition and subtraction. This is the most important piece of it. All of this gets to a discussion of the kviya. Anybody here know what a kviya is? Kviya is a 3-digit number that tells us everything we need to know about any given year in the calendar. How many days in every month? Which months is it a leap year? Is it not a leap year? What day of the week Pesach is going to fall? What day of the week Rosh Hashanah is going to fall? Anything you need to know about the calendar, which parshiyot are combined, which parshiyot are separated, when are they combined, when are they separated, which any question you have about the calendar is answered in a 3-digit number. The purpose of this the purpose of this course is to understand how we come to that 3-digit number and then to be able to calculate it, read it, and understand it. I can tell you that in the end, the entire Jewish calendar for 2,000 years is summed up on one sheet of paper. Just to give you a clue as to what this thing looks like. That is the entire calendar from the year 4000 to the year 6000. It's actually cut off in the bottom, but it's all one sheet. Series of 3-digit numbers. That 3-digit number defines everything there is to know about the calendar. To understand it, that's our goal. Right, as we get there, we're good. All right, I'll go back to where I was. Then at the end of the series, we're going to talk a little bit about some practical calendar issues. Up to 6, everything is theory. Then we get into the practice. Things like anniversaries, yahrzeits, parshiyot combined, separated. How do we navigate those variables in the system? And finally, there are various mitzvot that are particular to the solar calendar, namely Birkas HaChama, if we have time to discuss. And the famous question about Talamata, we'll see how we do time-wise. That's the outline. Week by week, it's a 6-week course. It's divided up. You'll get a page like this that has all of the slides with notes, space for notes next to them if you want. Questions here? We're good? All right, then we jump right in. Terms and definitions. Where is my... Everything about the calendar revolves around the sun and the moon and the relationship between them. Created on day 4, Vayas Elokim et shnei ha'maot ha'gdolim, et ha'maor ha'gadol le'memshelat ha'yom, et ha'maor ha'katon le'memshelat ba'layla, et ha'kochavim, Yirah Elokim ki tov. 2 great lights, sun and the moon, great luminaries in the sky. Everything we have know about the calendar, or the purpose of the calendar, is to make sense of how we navigate through the relationship between time as it follows the moon and time as it follows the sun. Now, a little bit of astronomy. Not a lot of astronomy, because this is not my field. I'm out of my league here. But a little bit of astronomy, just so we understand what we're looking at. Because we are talking about the new moon, the rising of the moon, the setting of the moon, the relationship to the seasons and the moon. So a little bit of how the moon works is in order. This is a simple model that I found online. I like this model for various reasons. Assuming for a moment, everybody see the moon tonight? Nice big supermoon. Okay, nice big supermoon is a full moon. Looks like this. I'm going to do two things. All right. We're going to go back to the beginning. And this is the start of a month. This is what happens on a monthly basis. Earth rotates on its axis. There's the little, that's you and me sitting on the top of the globe. We go on every 24 hours, we go from light to dark. We are sitting on an Earth that's rotating. The sun is rising and setting around us. And so we go through the day from sunrise to sunset and back. As we do, as you can see here, the moon itself is also rotating around the Earth and rotates around the Earth approximately. I don't have to be precise at this point, but approximately once every 29 and a half days. And so this will take us all the way around. What part of the moon do we see? So we all know that the moon waxes and wanes, and we see full moons and see that. The reason for that is that we are only looking at the part of the moon that is, we can only see the part of the moon that is facing the sun. So at any given moment, we're looking at a cross-section of the moon as it makes its way around. And so this is what the moon looks like to us. As it's rotating, we get to here. Okay? We get to here, which is a quarter of the way into the month. And we're looking at half a moon. Because we're looking at this cross-section of the moon right here. We can only see that half of the moon. Now, why can't we see the moon? The other variable involved in when we see the moon, it's not part of the calendar, of course, but it just happens to be interesting. It's a curiosity I always had, which is why sometimes you see the moon by day and sometimes you don't see the moon by day. And the reason for that is that the moon, essentially, as it's moving around in the orbit, what's this other yellow disk that's moving around in this orbit? That's the sun. Not to scale, of course, but that's the sun. So from our perspective of we're sitting on Earth, the sun is also rotating around the Earth. But the moon, at the point of new moon, is lying between us and the sun. As it begins to rotate in its orbit over the course of the month, watch its relationship to the sun. It's trailing behind the sun. You see that? The rotation of the Earth is such that that from our perspective, the sun and the moon at the moment of new moon are in line with each other, and then from our vantage point, obviously the sun doesn't revolve around the Earth, but from our vantage point, the sun is moving at a faster rate than the moon. And so as time progresses through the month, the moon begins to lag behind the sun. During those early days of the month, the moon is in the sky during the day. You can't see it because the sun is too bright. But as they get further and further apart, towards the end of the day, the sun will set and the moon will still be there. And at the other end of the month, similarly, the moon will still be in the sky before the sun completely rises and blocks, obscures it. So sometimes you'll see the moon at the late hours of the day, the early hours of the day. It's usually at the two ends of the spectrum. Is this more or less this model clear? Okay. Most of this is irrelevant to the calendar. Just interesting to note, but to see how the horizon diagram helps us understand what we're seeing. The sun sets, and the moon will set shortly afterwards, until you reach full moon.
Once you reach full moon, okay, now if you look at the relationship between them,
you'll see that as the sun is in the sky, the moon is on the other side of the earth. As the sun sets, the moon rises in the same orbit, because the earth is what's rotating, so it's going to rise and set in the same orientation. Sun rises in the east and sets in the west. The moon rises in the east and sets in the west. It's going to follow the same orbit because it's earth that's rotating. But as the month gets later now, you'll see that it'll look to us as if the sun is going to catch up to the moon until you're back to that moment when the sun lies, when the moon lies between us and the sun, and you can't see the moon anymore. Is this clear?
Questions on this? Okay, this is the astronomical model of what we're looking at. Most of it is not relevant to the understanding of the mechanics of the calendar. For our purpose, here's where the definitions that we need to know and need to work with. First, some basic concepts. A day. What is the definition of a day? Astronomically, one complete rotation of the Earth on its axis. This is how scientifically we define a day. That's what creates the sun rising, the sun setting. The sun is not moving. Right? What makes the sun rise and the sun set? Right? The Earth rotating on its axis. Similarly, a month is the technical definition, the mean interval between conjunctions of the moon and sun. What's a conjunction of the moon and the sun? Right? It's when the moon lies between the Earth and the sun. Theoretically, that should be a solar eclipse. Why is that not a solar eclipse? As we learned when we had the eclipse this year, because the moon is on a slightly different plane than the Earth, than the sun, so we see the moon even if it's we see the sun, even if the moon is between us and the sun, and we see a full moon, even though it's on the other side of the Earth. The Earth is not blocking the light, because the planes are a little bit off. And a year is one complete rotation of the Earth around the sun. That's what we define astronomically, that's what we define a year. Any argument on these definitions? Okay, we know them, we can forget them. They're irrelevant. From our perspective, we're talking about a calendar. And the calendar doesn't care whether the Earth is rotating on its axis or the sun is rising and setting, because the calendar is designed to measure time and to measure seasons and to measure visible phenomena. So from our perspective, a day is defined as the complete cycle of the setting, rising, and setting of the sun. I don't care if the Earth is rotating on its axis, or the sun is rotating around the Earth, which is not the case. It doesn't matter. A day is defined by complete rising and setting of the sun. A month is defined by the appearance of a new moon to the next moon. The moon has a cycle. In a year, how would we define a year from our vantage point? Is a cycle of long and short days. As the days get shorter in the winter, they get longer in the summer, and as the days get longer and shorter, we can measure that, and we can say, oh, we're back at a starting point, when we're back at a complete cycle of days getting longer or days getting shorter. Same phenomenon from the vantage point of the measure, what we can measure here from our visible world. And that brings us to the following definitions. These are your scientific definitions. 4 points in the calendar that are defined by the solar calendar, meaning they're defined by the seasons and the rotation of the Earth around the sun: the summer solstice, the winter solstice, the spring equinox, and the autumnal equinox. They are essentially what? The solstice. The sun stands still in declination, the longest day of the year, first day of summer. Solstice, the sun stands still. Summer solstice is the day in which, by the longest day of the year. The winter solstice is the shortest day of the year. The equinox sounds exactly what it sounds like. Equal.
Are the two points in the calendar in which day and night are more or less of equal length.
That's what defines this equinox, and they happen for, each one of these happens once, twice a year. You have a summer solstice and a winter solstice, a spring equinox and autumnal equinox. They're, as the Earth rotates around the Sun in a annual cycle.
In the calendar, in the Hebrew calendar, we have references, we have words for these names, for these events. However,
don't confuse you. They are built around Hebrew months,
but they do not reflect a lunar cycle. So the summer solstice is referred to in the halacha as the Tkufa Tammuz.
A Tkufa, in this sense, literally means a period of time.
But the Tkufa Tammuz, different from the month of Tammuz, is not referring to the Hebrew month. It's referring to
the summer solstice, which takes place in and around the time that is typically around the month of Tammuz.
What month is in the summer?
In the Hebrew calendar.
Oh.
What month
Tammuz
is typically a summer month?
Tammuz.
Tevet is typically a winter month.
We are presently in the month of Tevet. It's cold outside.
It's winter. And so, Tkufa Tevet
is the Tkufa that takes place in and around the month of Tevet,
namely the winter solstice. Tkufa Nisan, again, is the Tkufa referring to the either equinox or solstice that takes place around the springtime.
Which event takes place around the springtime? More or less?
The spring equinox. Tkufat Nisan. And similarly, Tkufat Tishrei is the autumnal equinox, which is the day when day equals night, first day of fall.
Those four terms we will come back to. The word for Tkufa is
reference to either a solstice or an equinox.
Anybody ever hear the halacha that you start to say Talumata 60 days after
Tkufat Tishrei? Right.
Okay, 60 days after the Tishrei. Okay, that's an autumnal,
that's a solar event. And hence it has an English date to it. Okay,
that's a solar event.
Even though it has the names Tishrei, Nisan, Tevet, Tammuz associated with them, they are solar events.
They refer to the autumnal or
They refer to either the solstice or the equinox. The next definition that we need to know is called the molad.
What's the molad?
We typically define it as the birth of the new moon, but it's not really. The molad is defined as the conjunction. Remember, that's the moment when the moon lies between the Earth and the Sun. The conjunction of the moon between the Earth and the Sun. The average time of appearance of the moon from month to month. The molad can be a moment. The molad can be a length of time. You can use the same term for both. We refer to the molad as a moment when the moon is in that middle state. We can refer to the length of a molad, or the length of time it takes for the moon to go from one cycle to the next. However, it's not an exact same amount of time every month. It's not exactly precise because of the way the rotations work. And so we talk about an average. So the average length of the time it takes for the conjunction of the moon from one cycle to the next is the molad of any given moon. Everybody with me? I have so far avoided using the term Rosh Chodesh.
Because Rosh Chodesh is an arbitrary term. We define a moment when we celebrate the new moon. We call it Rosh Chodesh. It's not the molad. The molad is an astronomical event. Rosh Chodesh is a calendar celebration event. They're two different things.
Everybody with me? Okay. And here's where the problem begins. We are familiar with this part of the problem, so we're going to go through this fairly quickly. We have two calendar systems, one that follows the sun and one that follows the moon. The problem is defined mathematically as follows. A month, by definition, what does the word month mean? Right? It's the cycle of the moon. It comes from the same root as the word moon. So there are 12 months, we call them lunar months, to distinguish from the English calendar, which has a month that has no meaning whatsoever. And the month of January has no meaning whatsoever because of the fact that it's cold, because it has no correlation to the moon. 31 days, and it certainly can't have any correlation to the moon. So we call it a month for other reasons, but the term originally for month came from the word moon, and more or less a month is 29 and a half days. 12 months over the course of the year is 354 days. Agreed? A year in measured in the solar cycle, we go from one equinox back to the same equinox, one solstice back to the same solstice, is a solar year, and that is approximately 365 and a quarter days, more or less. And hence, there's a difference between the two of 11 and a quarter days. That's well known. What are the solutions to this problem? And there are essentially three options. There are more, but there are three primary options. One is, ignore the moon and just work off the sun. If you live in a society in which everything is built around agriculture, all you care about are the seasons, you couldn't care less about the moon, you develop a calendar built around the sun. In the Roman calendar, months lose any connection to the moon, what we have today. We have a solar calendar, the English calendar, I should say, and more or less 1/12 of the year. Kind of just disregard the moon altogether. Or we could have equivalent to the Muslim calendar today, which is a lunar calendar, and the months lose any connection to the seasons, and hence we can have holidays of the month that can move from one season to another. The Jewish calendar is not that simple. We had to create a hybrid calendar, as we know. We'll see what that hybrid is in a moment. For as an example, I give you a kind of a brief synopsis of the ancient Egyptian calendar upon which the Roman calendar is built. The ancient Egyptian calendar had a solar year of 365 days, had 12 months of 30 days each, leaving 5 days out, and those 5 days were added to the year to represent the birthdays of various Egyptian gods. Earliest civilization to accurately measure the solar year based on the rising tides of the Nile. Some interesting information about Julius Caesar's revolution of the Roman calendar, based on the encounter with Cleopatra, which gave rise to the Julius calendar, or the Julian calendar. Julian calendar was the precursor to the existing secular calendar for many, many centuries, until the story of Pope Gregory, Gregory the Fourth, who decided to update the Julian calendar, and hence we call the secular calendar today the Gregorian calendar. But it's built upon this. The Hebrew calendar is built upon a different principle, namely, Shamor et Chodesh Aviv. Shamor et Chodesh Aviv means Pesach has to be in the spring. Pesach has to be in the springtime, and therefore, the definition of that means, let's put it into mathematical terms, that Pesach must always fall after the spring or vernal equinox. That's the real technical definition. To say that it comes in the spring is less scientific. To say that it comes after the spring equinox gives me a specific date. I know when the spring equinox needs to be. Pesach has to be after that, more or less. To do that, I need to link the solar and lunar calendars together by a process called, here's the fancy word for it, intercalation. To intercalate means to add an extra period of time of a month into the year to create a leap year or a gravid year. In Hebrew, eshana mi'uberet, because mi'uberet means pregnant. You have a pregnant year because it has an extra month in it. Then there's some other additional criteria which we'll get to much later that have to do with the days of the week, and that's not for us right now. The fixed Hebrew calendar that we use today, there was a time when the calendar was dynamic, meaning the months
were declared Rosh Chodesh by the Beit Din. Beit Din would see the new moon. Witnesses would come to the Beit Din, say, we saw the new moon. They would declare that they're Rosh Chodesh, and you have the new moon. The Rosh Chodesh system was dynamic. The leap year cycle was defined based on, they would go out into the fields and see, come Pesach time, or a couple of weeks before Pesach, if the harvest was ready. If the harvest was ready, it was spring. If the harvest wasn't ready, it wasn't spring. Everything was dynamic. More or less attributed to Hillel II in the year 4111 or 351 CE, Hillel HaZaken, Hillel HaKotel, I think, actually, sat down and created a structured, rigid, fixed calendar. And that calendar, more or less, is the calendar we have been using ever since. And so all of the calendar charts cover approximately 2,000 years from 4111 to the year 6,000. Note that it's 2 centuries after the destruction of the temple. For a couple of hundred years after the Churban of the Beis Hamikdash, we still had a dynamic calendar. So the dynamic calendar, the fixed calendar, is not related to the destruction of the Beit Hamikdash. It's related more to the dispersal of the Jews across the globe, and therefore the need to establish a universal system. Just a piece of interesting trivia. This is a Gemara in Masechet Shabbat, which explains why you are all here. Gemara says, "Kol yadei lechashev betkufot mazalot ve'eno choshev alav ha'ketuv omer ve'tpol Hashem lo yabitu ma'aseh yadav lo ra'u." Anybody who has the ability to calculate the cycles and the planetary courses, but does not do so, of him, Scripture says, but they regard not the work of the Lord, neither have they considered the operation of his hands. That H should be capitalized. This is, if you know how to understand the calendar, you have a glimpse into what's going on in the constellations and in the stars, and you have a bit of a sense of the greatness of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Important to do so. All right, here's where we get into the math. The most important piece of math, most important piece of information we are going to work with is the length of a mola, or the length of a month. Precise, down to the quarter of a second, or a third of a second, calculation of the length of a lunar month. It will be the basis of all the calculations of the calendar. The mola, as we said before, is the conjunction of the moon with the sun. At the point of the mola, what part of the moon is visible? None. So you can't go out and see the molad. Because the molad is, by definition, the point, the midpoint of when the moon is not visible. So we have to work off the math of when we assume that molad is taking place. And so we talk about the length of the molad as an average length of the cycle of the moon from molad to molad. Piece of information number one. Number two, we don't talk about hours, minutes, and seconds in the calendar. None of the math is built around a 60-minute hour and a 60-second minute. Instead, we have a 24-hour clock. But each hour is defined by, is divided up into 1,080 parts. So if you listen carefully to the announcement of Birkas HaChodesh next month, you'll hear that the molad is announced, such and such number of hours, minutes, and parts. And I, for the sake and the benefit of everybody here, translate those parts into seconds. But they are, in fact, not in the halacha. In the halacha, we talk about parts. Chelak, halakim. Why? Why 1,080? Because the Rambam writes that it was a number that was wholly divisible by 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, 9, 10, 12, 15, 18, 20, 24, 27, and 30 without need of fractions. And it made the math calculations for the calendar simple. So they took an arbitrary number that allowed them to divide the hour up in such a way that all the math of the calendar was in whole number integers simply divided by these. Makes my life easier because I don't have to deal with fractions and decimals, and it makes your life easier to understand. For the curious amongst us,
1,080 parts per hour means that there are 18 parts in a minute. That means that each part is equal to 3 1/3 seconds. When I announce the molad and I have to translate from parts of halakim, from halakim to seconds, you'll hear me pause sometimes because I have to calculate 14 parts is equal to 14 times 3 1/3 seconds. Now do the math real fast in your head. Not so simple. Takes me a little bit of time, but that's what's going on. Questions? No questions, I'm going to keep going. So just stop me if there's a question. One additional piece of information, and that is that our calendar clock is not a normal clock. Why not? Because the sun rises and sets at a different time every day. If we want to work off a calendar and be able to determine what's going on in the days of the week and when the molad occurs, etc., we need to work off a structure. So for that structure, we need a convention. When does the day begin? So when does our day begin? When does the secular day begin?
Secular day?
Hmm?
Midnight.
Midnight. When does the Jewish day begin?
Sunset.
Sunset. Midnight's easier to work with. You know why? Because midnight's going to be the same time every day. So if you build a calendar around midnight, you have a fixed calendar, you know exactly when the day begins. You build a day around sunset, and you have a problem. The sunset shifts. And the length of the hour shifts. There are many halachos pertaining to zmanim of days, of time, during the day, third hour of the day, fourth hour of the day, related to Kriyat Shema, related to Shemoneh Esrei, and that navigate the shifts. The length of the hour can shift. If you take the day from sunrise to sunset, divide by 12, you have 12 hours in a day. The length of the hour is going to be different in the summer than it is in the winter. It's called Sh'ot Zmaniot. Calendar doesn't work that way. Calendar has to work with fixed numbers. So they created an arbitrary clock. But the confusing part is that clock doesn't start at midnight. To match sunset, that clock starts at 6 p.m. And so all calendar math is built around a 24-hour clock that starts at 6 p.m. 6 p.m. is hour zero. 7 p.m. is hour 1. 8 p.m. is hour 2. Okay? Now, if we want to translate into our clock, what do we have to do? Say it again. Add 6 hours. We'll just extrapolate. So let's do the exercise. 2D3H. What does that stand for? Second day? Third hour. Second day, third hour is Sunday, 9 p.m. If anybody have any questions to how I calculate the this nomenclature, 2D3H, day 2, hour 3, is Sunday, 9 p.m.
Day 2 is Sunday?
Yes.
It's arbitrarily starting at Friday.
Well, it starts, the day of the week starts on Sunday. Shabbos is day 7.
Right. So
it's
day
2
Sunday.
Okay, so Sunday is day 1.
Oh, but it's after 6 p.m., so it's day 2.
Correct.
Got it.
Your day starts at 6 p.m. So 6 p.m. is day 2 is Monday. Monday, hour 3 is in our clock. Monday, hour 3 would be
Monday,
3 a.m. The calendar clock, Monday, third hour is Sunday's 9 p.m. Your day starts at 6 p.m. Follow? Let's try another one. 0 hour. 0 day, 0 hour. What? No. Almost. Try it again.
Well, I see the answer. I'm
getting. No, don't look at the answer.
I don't get it.
The day starts on Saturday. But the day starts Saturday when? Of the day before. So it's going to be Friday, 6 p.m.
The day starts
Friday.
Sunset.
Friday is the beginning of Saturday. But 6 p.m. is your equivalent to sunset. Shabbos starts at sunset on Friday.
Right.
Okay, so your equivalent to Shabbos starting sunset on Friday is day zero starts.
Isn't day zero Sunday, you said?
Day one is Sunday.
Day one is... Yeah, sorry. My mistake. Shabbos is zero.
Oh.
Because the numbers go 0 to 6. Sorry, that was another piece of information I forgot to put on. Your days go 1 through 1. Your days are numbered 0, 1 through 6. There's no day 7. That's because all the math of the calendar, this I'll come to in a second, is modulus 7. Because it's all modulus 7, there is no 7. 7 is 0.
So day 1 is Shabbos.
It's like in base 10, there's no number 10. 10 is 1, 0. Okay? So your numbers are 0 through 9. So your 7-day week is 1 through 6, and then 0. So 0 is Shabbos, and Shabbos starts Friday, 6 p.m. Okay? This one. Correct. Which is? Midnight, Saturday morning. Correct. Next. So this is day five. Day five is Thursday, 18th hour. 18th hour is? Correct. Noon on Thursday. Okay, that's going to be Friday, 4 p.m. Okay, we're good on this? We can forget it, because we're just going to work off numbers, whenever those numbers are. If you want to translate those numbers into our clock, just add 6 hours. We're good? Oh, I had something else there, which disappeared on me. Is that okay? Wait a minute. Move right along. So is this clock clear? We just need to add this 6 hours or and can translate into our modern clock. The day starts, any given day starts the day before at 6 p.m. All right. Let's calculate our leap year cycle. That's the most important piece of this information. Then we'll get to the monthly calendar as well. But how does the leap year cycle work? The Machzor HaKatan. So for this, we need to go back to the Pesukim that define the calendar. There are essentially two sources in the text of the Torah, and there's a Midrash. The two sources in the text of the Torah are Pesuk and Devarim, that we saw earlier, Shemor et Chodesh Aviv. Shemor et Chodesh Aviv means that I need to safeguard the springtime month. In order to vasita Pesach Hashem Elokecha, to be able to bring Pesach, so make Pesach always in the springtime month. In a lunar calendar, that requires effort. Because if I just work off a lunar calendar, that holiday of the springtime, namely Chag Pesach, which is the month of Nisan, is going to navigate around the seasons. The other verse is in Shmos Perek Yibet, Achodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodashim Rishonu Lachem Lachodshei Hashana, which means that I work off a lunar calendar system. The option, based on this first pasuk, is I could basically work off a lunar calendar and say, okay, we're going to work off a fixed lunar calendar, fixed solar calendar, and Pesach is always going to be in the springtime. Just define Pesach as the first day of spring. And so the calendar by itself, I always have Pesach in the spring. The reason that that's not an option is because I have another verse that says that my calendar has to be built around months. HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, Rosh Chodeshim, Rishonu Lachem L'Chodshei Hashana. I have to have a calendar of months. Months built around the moon. Because that's what a month means. Why is a month in Hebrew called a Chodesh? Because the moon renews itself every month. Chodesh, Chadash. The moon is has a cycle of renewal. So I have to have a lunar calendar, and I have to have Nisan as the first month, and that month has to be in the spring. These two verses together create the challenge of the solar lunar calendar that we have, the Sefer calendar. And that brings us to the third source, which is a Midrash called Sod HaIbur. The Midrash says the following. V'yota sha'a masar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe Rabbeinu chukot cheshbon ha'yareach. V'yodiyu hech yehei me'aber shanim v'koveh chodashim. At that moment, God transmitted to Moshe Rabbeinu the precise rules for calculating the new moon and informed him how to intercalate the year and establish the months. Initially, all of that was done through the authority of the Beit Din. The Beit Din had sweeping authority to work the dynamic calendar as they saw. So they could make Rosh Chodesh on the day which Aden came and saw the new moon, or they could close up shop, put the shingle on the door and say, we're not accepting witnesses today, come back tomorrow and make Rosh Chodesh tomorrow. They had sweeping authority to effect change in the calendar based on what they saw the needs of the community were. This is a very famous story. It's the Mishnah Masechet Rosh Hashanah. The story I'll read it in, share with you in English. There was an occasion which two witnesses came and they said, we saw the moon in its proper time. Rabbi Gamliel, who's the most famous rabbi in the Talmud to have been involved in the calendar issues, Rabbi Gamliel had a chart on his door, or in his Beit Din, with images of the month, of the moon, at every given possible orientation of the month. Rabbi Gamliel accepted their evidence. Rabbi Dosa ben Hyrcana said, they are false witnesses. Oh, sorry, I skipped a piece. On the night, they came and they saw the moon in its... They came and they said, we saw the moon in its proper time, but on the night, which should have been the new moon, it was not seen. In other words, witnesses came, they said, we saw the new moon. They calculated when the new moon was supposed to be, and that for the next day, and on the next day, there was no moon. So what does that mean? What are the options?
It's cloudy.
It's cloudy. Or, assuming it wasn't cloudy and there was no moon to be seen.
They were wrong.
That the witnesses were wrong. That when the witnesses said they saw the new moon, they were wrong. And they saw a street light and not the moon. Right? Only two possibilities. Can't have a moon disappear. And so, Rabbi Gamliel said, they are false witnesses. How can men testify that a woman has borne a child when on the next day we see her belly still swollen and pregnant? Doesn't work. Rabbi Yeshua said to him, I see your argument. Rabbi Gamliel, on the other hand, had said, no, we accepted these witnesses. We declared the day of Rosh Chodesh. We're going to accept the day of Rosh Chodesh, even if we think the witnesses were testified falsely. Thereupon, Rabbi Gamliel said to him, I enjoin you to appear before me with your staff and your money on the day which, according to your reckoning, should be the Day of Atonement. The rest of the story is not our story. There's a big argument between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Gamliel, but between Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Gamliel. The short of it was that they accepted the authority of Rabbi Gamliel and the Beit Din to make that day Rosh Chodesh, even though they knew astronomically that Rosh Chodesh was not until the day the next day. They knew the witnesses were false witnesses, or they were mistaken witnesses. They accepted their testimony anyway, because that's the authority of the Beit Din. However, when it became clear that the dynamic Beit Din could no longer function, they needed to affix the calendar. And they worked off a number of principles. Principle number one, Tanu Rabbanan, our rabbis taught, Gemara Rosh Hashanah. Once the heavens were covered with clouds and the likeness of the moon was seen on the 29th of the month, the public thought to declare a new moon and the rabbinical court wanted to sanctify it. But Rabbi Gamliel, same Rabbi Gamliel, who we just saw, said to them, I have it on the authority of my father's father that the renewal of the moon takes place after not less than 29 and a half days, 2/3 of an hour, and 73 parts of an hour. Says Rabbi Gamliel, I have a Masoreth. Where does that Masoreth come from? His father and his father before them and his father before them. Before that, probably goes back to so the Ibra that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu in Mitzrayim. A Masoreth that says there is a minimum length of the month, not less than 29 days, half a day, 2/3 of an hour, and 73 parts. How much is a part? How much is a chelek?
3/2 seconds.
Not in seconds. Oh, what is by definition?
18.
By definition, a part is 1/1080th of an hour. Remember the magic number, 1080. Like all our televisions are 1080p. Okay, 1080p is your magic number in your calendar. Maybe your magic number in your TV too, but it's a magic number in your calendar. Okay. So now, based on that statement, we have a number to work with. 29 and a half days, 2/3 of an hour, and 73 parts is the length of a moled, says Rabbi Gamliel. Have a number. Now I need to plug that number into our mathematical formula. So the first thing we need to know is if an hour is 1,080 parts, 2/3 of an hour is 720 parts. Simple math, because the number 1080 is divisible easily. And so 2/3 of an hour is 720, which means what is my total number or length of my molad? 793. 29 days, 12 hours, 793 parts. 720 plus 73. Right? The 2/3 hour is 720 parts, plus the 73 parts becomes 793. 29 days, 12 hours, 793 parts. That's my molad. That's the magic number. If you learn nothing else tonight, remember that number.
What's one?
29 days, 12 hours, 793 parts. You won't have to remember it because it's always written down. That's the number. In the language of the halacha, so the Rambam, when he writes all this, he uses a code, he uses Hebrew letters. So he talks about Chav Tet Yud Bet Tav Shin Tzadik Gimel. Much more complicated. This is easier to remember. 29 days, 12 hours, 793 parts. Curiosity. How long would 2 months be? I want to calculate that. Just without doing the math, just think about it. How would I calculate 2 months? I'd multiply this by two.
Yeah.
Okay? But to multiply this by two, you can do either left to right or right to left, depending on what kind of math you want to work with. But if I multiply 793 parts by two, I'm going to get... Somebody pull out a calculator.
1586.
Right, I'm going to get 1500 something. Okay, let's say that's 800. Just to round off, I'd get 1600. So slightly under 1600 parts. 1600 parts is an hour plus. Because how much is an hour?
1080.
So the same way it works in the decimal system. I've got to move numbers over into columns. There's 1080 parts in an hour, 24 hours in a day. So when I do the math and multiply by 2, I always have to remember that anything greater than 1080 is going to add an hour and then accordingly. Clear? And it's the same as working in seconds, except that this is a different kind of math because my hour is divided into parts, which is a function of 1080.
Do you know the first line again? It's just 29 and a half days.
Yeah, there's your half a day right there.
Okay. Oh, there's my half a day, it's 12 hours, right?
And there, together, is 793 parts. 2/3 of an hour is 720, 73 additional.
Got it.
All right. Out of curiosity, how accurate is that molad calculation?
Just curiosity. This is irrelevant because the calendar didn't care about how accurate it was, really. It was as accurate as they could make it.
However, it's just interesting to note that the Masoret goes back to Moshe Rabbeinu and Hasidut in Mitzrayim, and it's the only part of the calendar that goes back to Moshe, is the Molad. So how accurate is it? Well, if I translate it into our numbers, namely I translate 793 parts into minutes and seconds, this is what I come up with. And the astronomical calculation of the month today that we have is scientifically, is 29 days, 12 hours, 44 minutes, and 2.8 seconds, which is pretty close. They are less than a second apart. The difference is half a second a month, or 6 seconds a year, or 3.5 hours in the course of 2,000 years.
would be the margin of error on the molad. That that's the only part of the calendar that was given to Moshe as a Masoret. Everything else was calculated. It's just fascinating that it's pretty darn close. That would lose approximately a day every 14,400 years. So when we get to 14,000 years in the, of calendar, our length of a month would lose a day. I'm not worth losing sleep over. Now, I'm much more interested in the length of the year. Remember, all of this is designed to do what? To come back to calculating the leap year cycle. I have to go back to the leap year cycle. So in order to calculate the leap year cycle, I need to know exactly how long my solar year is and how long my lunar year is. Lunar year, 12 months, isn't enough. I need to know exactly when that lunar year and how long the lunar year is. What's a lunar year by definition? What's a solar year by definition? No. What's a solar year by definition?
Oh, from
a full cycle of
of
seasons, seasons, or of right. Days and nights can long in that. What's a lunar year by definition? 12
months.
No, 12 months. Remember, a lunar year by definition is a number of months, not a number of days. It's a number of months. So if I my lunar year is 12 months, how long is that? Precisely. Now that I have a molad calculation, I can work through the numbers. So if I take 29 days, 12 hours, 793 parts, what is that?
1 month.
That's the length of 1 month. And I multiply that by 12, I will get the exact length of a lunar year that I can compare to a solar year. That number comes to 354, 8 hours, and 876 peak. You want to do the math? You're welcome to. It's not hard. You just have to work with large numbers. You have to divide this, you have to multiply this by 12, and then divide by 1080. The remainder goes here. The math is manageable, but right now, to save time, I've given you the answer. 354 days, 8 hours, 876 parts in a lunar year. How long is a leap year? Okay, a leap year is not 13 months. A leap year, by definition, is going to be 13 times the same length of a month. And that's going to come out to 383 days, 21 hours, 589 parts. That is a precise length of a leap year. You good on this? Now, once I have these two numbers, now I can plug into my cycle. Okay, now I can begin to plug in to what happens to Pesach. However, two more pieces of information I need to look at. The first is a mathematical concept called modular division. A lot of the calculations, not for the next piece, but for what's going to, these slides are a little bit out of order, but what's going to come next is we're going to be concerned with days of the week. I apologize for that. These are out of order because this is really relevant to the calculation of months and not the leap year cycle. But nonetheless, we're going to get to a point in which all our math is going to require us to know the day of the week, and that's it. To know the day of the week, and that's it, I need to take all my numbers and make them modulo 7. What does modular math mean? Modular math is a mathematical system where my numbers wrap around a fixed point. For example, clock time. What is clock time? Clock time is a classic example of modular math. Namely, what's my modular? What's my modulo? It's 12. Right? All my numbers, once I get to past 12, they start over again. Because in a clock time, I'm looking at where I am on the clock face,
Once I get past 12, I start all over again, unless I'm working off a 24-hour clock, in which case okay, I can do the same thing with a 24 number. But if I start at 9 p.m., and I want to say, okay, what time is it going to be 4 hours later? The answer is going to be not 13 p.m., but rather 1 a.m. Okay? A.m. and p.m. allows me a 24-hour clock in it with a 12-hour modulo. I can move 24-hour time, military time. But modulo 12 is clock time. We're going to work with a calendar system based called modulo 7, which is interested in the day of the week. So if I come up with, if I have a given month, let's say Molad takes place on a Monday at 12 p.m. Next month, a month later, that Molad is going to take place 3 days later. Okay? 29 days, etc. Okay? I can simplify my math because all I really want to know is what day of the week is. So I take that 29, divide it by 7, and I end up with the remainder tells me the day of the week or how many days there. We're going to work with a system called modulo math. So, for example, a simple year is 354 days, 8 hours, 876 parts. That's the number we came up with before, correct? Right? That's not a new number. That's the number we saw before. From 1 year to the next, how much of a shift is there in the day of the week? Where does the... In a week cycle, where does that year end? Divide that by 7, and I end up with 4 days, 8 hours, 876 months. My interest in the for the calendar math, for the most part, is going to be modulo 7. I'm going to divide everything by 7 and take the remainder. Because what I'm looking for is what does it do to the day of the week? This is more relevant to when we get to the calendar of what days of the week certain holidays fall on. That's why it's a little bit out of place, but I'm not sure why it's here. But nonetheless, the Molad shift, the term that we're going to look at, called Molad shift, is the shift of the day of the week of a 12-month period of time. In the course of 12 months, the Molad from 1 year to the next is going to shift by this number. If I know when Molad of Tishrei is this year, I can calculate when Molad Tishrei is a year from now. How? By adding this number. Does everybody understand how I got this number? Yeah. This is a big number. 354 days, 8 hours, 876 days. In my calculation, I don't need to know what exact date the 12 months ends. I need to know how many days from now, in the course of a week, is it going to shift? So I'm much more interested in mod 7 on all my numbers. And so my day is 354 divided by 7 is?
5 with 1 left.
Well, 350 with 1 left. With 4 left.
Right, 354.
You follow?
Yeah.
So how much is 354 divided by 7? How much is 354 divided by 7? 350 divided by 7 is 50.
Right.
Remainder 4.
Remainder 4.
354 divided by 7 is 350 is 50 remainder 7.
4.
Stop. Stop. Let me do this. 354 divided by 7 is 50 remainder 4.
Got it.
With me? Where am I losing it?
I don't understand what you're calculating here.
I'm calculating the shift in the day of the week. Why, we'll see in a minute. But I'm calculating, I'm dividing all my, I'm simplifying all my numbers. So I know when the Molad is now, a year from now. Right. The Molad is Sunday at 6 p.m. A year from now, 12 months, 12 lunar months from now, it's going to be 4 days later. 50 weeks, but 4 days later. I don't need to know about the weeks. I just want to know about the days. So I know just about the days. I have to chop off anything that's a division by 7. Okay? It's just a simplified way of working with the map of the calendar.
Now you'll see how it applies to the to the leap year cycle in a second. And I could do the same thing with the gravity year, and I get up with a and I come up with a different number because I have 5 months, 380 days instead of 354 days. And here, that's the shift of in the molad over the course of the week. What about the tkufa, or the year, the annual cycle? Okay, so what is the difference between the solar year and the lunar year? So now I'll go back to my number. Forget everything I said about March 7th. Come back to that. I threw it in here out of order. That whole piece should have been before the next unit, so I apologize. We'll skip it for now. But this is more important for us. This is the difference between a solar year and a lunar year. The total length of a lunar year? 8 hours, 876 parts. So everybody understand, we calculated that. That was the 12 months. That's the length of a solar year. What am I looking at in the length of a solar year? It's an odd way to present a solar year. What am I looking at?
365 1/4 days.
Right, 365 1/4 days. But in order to simplify the math, I've taken the quarter days, which is 6 hours, and I've divided it into 5 hours and 1080 parts. That's just to simplify the math. What's this number going to be? The difference between solar year and a lunar year. How many days difference between which is longer? Solar year. So the number here is going to be a positive number. The difference is solar year minus the lunar year is equal to 10 days, 21 hours, 204 parts. Well, we say approximately 11 days a year. Solar year, lunar year loses. That's 10 days, 21 hours, 204 parts. That's my magic number. A leap year is going to work the other way around. Why? The leap year is longer than the solar year. So when I take the leap year and I take the length of the lunar year, subtract it from the solar year, what am I going to end up with? A negative number. So my lunar year is approximately 18 days, right, almost 19 days, longer than a lunar leap year is approximately 19 days longer than my solar year. Those are the numbers that I need to calculate for the leap year cycle. Okay, so remember these two numbers. I have them written down in every slide, so don't have to worry about memorizing. But that's the length, that is what we call the tkufa shift. What does a tkufa shift mean? It means the difference between the lunar year and the solar year, either in a leap year or in a simple. My apologies for throwing in the module 7 too early. Confused us. Don't need it for now. Here's the leap year rule. The leap year rule is Tkufat Tevet Shalach Ledefunu Ba'aben Rabba Kad Chazitel De Mashcha Tkufat Tevet Ad Shitsa Benisen Abda Yishaitavo Tochushla. When you see the cycle of Tevet extend into the 16th of Nisan, declare that year a leap year and have no doubts. What does that mean? Tkufat Tevet is which season?
Winter.
When you see the winter months extend to the 16th of Nisan, meaning when you see the 16th of Nisan, or when you see the spring equinox is going to be later than the 16th of Nisan, then you have a problem. Because Pesach's in the winter. And so the definition of your leap year is defined as follows. If Tkufat Nisan, otherwise known as the Spring Equinox, the way the Jewish calendar calculated it, which is the way the Julian calendar calculated it, which is 365 1/4 days, which is an imprecise number. That imprecision will come to later. But Tkufat Nisan is less than, is earlier than the 15th of the month, then that month is Nisan and the year is a simple year.
If, on the other hand, Tkufat Nisan, the spring equinox, is going to fall later than the 15th of the month, namely the 16th of the month or later, then what month is it going to be? It has to become a leap year. That month has to be Adar 2. We're going to push Nisan off by month. That's why the note, that's why it's not if Tkufat Nisan is later than the 15th of Nisan. If Tkufat Nisan is earlier than the 15th of the month, I don't care what month it is. If it falls earlier than the 15th of the month, that month is Nisan. We're good. If it falls later than the 16th of the month, or on or after the 16th of the month, then that month has to become Adar 2. That year has to become a leap. Because Pesach has to be, so the 15th of the month, has to be after the spring equinox. That's the definition of the leap year cycle. The problem here is, I need a starting point. So we're going to work off the following assumption. Given the tkufa, tkufa meaning the equinox of any given year, I can calculate the equinox of the year following by applying the tkufa shift. So for example, let's just take an arbitrary month. We'll call it an arbitrary year with Tkufa Nisan and Rosh Chodesh or Molad Nisan occur at the same time. That's the theoretically perfect starting point of the calendar, where my spring begins the month of the spring. The month of the spring is Nisan, begins the Molad of Nisan, Tkufa Nisan is the spring equinox. Let's assume a perfect calendar starting point where Tkufa Nisan is the same as Molad Nisan. Agree? Mola defines the month, Tkufa defines the seasons. Tkufa Nisan a year later is going to be when? Where did that number come from?
That's the difference in simple year.
Right. Tkufa Nisan. Back to here. This number defines the difference between the solar year and the lunar year. If it's a simple year, from the molad, remember, we work off months. We work off lunar months. We don't work off, there are no days in the solar calendar. There are seasons. Days are only in the lunar calendar. So, I come to that number and I apply it to my arbitrary starting point, zero. Tkufat Nisan occurs on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Tkufat Nisan a year later is going to occur 10 days later, 11 days later, 10 days,
right.
21 hours, 204 parts after it occurred in this first year. Because the Tkufat Nisan is a solar year, and this tells me in my arbitrary starting point of Nisan, I am now no longer at Molad of Nisan, I'm now at 10 days, 21 hours later. Yes? Yes? Okay. Third year. If I apply the same number again, what am I going to get? 204 times 2, 408. 21 times 2 is 42. 42 in hours means an extra day here, and I get to 18 hours here. 10 days times 2 plus the extra day comes to 21 days, which means that Tkufat Nisan is going to be 21 days later than Molad Nisan was. Follow? I followed this principle. Tkufat Nisan is the spring equinox. Occurs on what day of the month?
On the
21st day of the month. 22nd day of the month. Correct? Of the month. I didn't say what month it is. 21 days of the month. If that month was Nisan, that would be too late, because Pesach would have been in the winter. So what do? I define this month as
Adar 2.
And now my next year is a leap year. If the next year is a leap year, what am I going to do to this number? What's my next step? I'm going to subtract the Tkufa shift of a gravid year. I'm going to subtract the 18 days, 21, whatever it is. And that will tell me when Tkufa Nisan occurs in this month, a year from now. You understand what I'm trying to do? I'm working off days that are in a month, solar days. And I'm trying to figure out when, lunar days. I'm trying to figure out when a solar event is going to take place. For that, I need to know the exact difference between a solar year and a lunar year, in a regular year, and in a leap year. I have my two fixed numbers. I'm either going to add them or subtract them accordingly. And I'm going to determine whether the result is on or before the 15th of the month. I can make that month Nisan. If it's later than the 16th of the month, I'm going to make that month Adar 2 and apply the leap year shift. Until I get back to my starting point. Follow? So let's work this at this. I forgot this last step of the slide. Hey, the next, after 21 days, 18 hours, 408 parts, that's a leap year because it's greater than the 15th. And the next year I'm going to apply the leap year shift. All right. So let's now do the math. Remember my two fixed numbers. 10 days, 21 hours, 204 parts represents? Difference between? Solar and lunar year in a?
Regular
year. Negative 18 days, 15 hours, 589 parts represents the difference or the shift in the season in a leap year. Working backwards. Lunar year is longer than, lunar leap year is longer than a solar year. Regular leap year is shorter than a solar year. I start with a hypothetical molad year. This year doesn't exist. I start with a hypothetical. I'm looking for a cycle. When do I get back to point zero? So I start with a point at which, hypothetically, molad is equal to the tkufa. 0 days, 0 hours, 0 parts. Starting point, year one. Year two, the tkufa, the equinox, occurs 10 days, 21 hours, 204 parts later in that month. What kind of year is that? Regular year. Second year. That's now I get my third year. My third year, I apply that same number, and I come up with 21 days, 18 hours, 408 parts. That's exactly the math we had in the previous slide. That year, however, is later than the 16th. That has to be a leap year. My next line is going to be subtracting 18, 15 hours, 589 parts. Brings me back to 3 days, 2 hours, 899 parts. Is that year a regular year or a leap year? Regular year, because the tkufa or the equinox is occurring before the 15th or the 16th of the month. I add 10 days, 21, 204, and I get 14,023. Everybody see the math? I don't have to calculate the math. Just trust me. Works. Right? 14 days, 0 hours, 23 parts. Leap year or not? Regular year. Next time, 24 days, 21 hours, 227 parts. Regular year or leap year? Leap year. So my next calculation is going to be subtracting 18, 15, 589. That month is now not Nisan, but Adar 2. 13 months until the next equinox. And so we continue. And here we can continue the list. I don't have to do it. But from here you'll see 6 days, 17 days. This is a leap year. Subtracting 18 days, 15 hours gives me a negative number. What does a negative number mean?
Really early.
Early. Right, you know what they say about holidays? They're never on time. Holidays are either late or early. What does this number tell me? That the holidays are early or the holidays are late? No.
tells me the equinox is in the previous month. The equinox is already in the month before Nisan, which is Adar, which means that Pesach is going to be much later in the spring than it otherwise would have otherwise been. Okay, so Pesach, so holidays are late. Next, 9 days, so applying this shift, 9 days, 20 days, the leap year, etc., etc. And look what happens in year down here in the bottom. I get to 18 days, 16 hours, 1074 parts. It's a leap year, correct? The year following, what do I get to? 0 days, 1 hour, 485 parts. That is remarkably close to 000. It's not exact, but it's as close as we're going to get for now. And therefore, I can say, at least arbitrarily, that I'm back to my starting point. Now, I still have an offset that's going to accumulate over time. But at least for now, I have a cycle. How many years in the cycle?
20
Well, I'm not counting 20, because 20 is back to 1. Okay, so how many years in the cycle? 19. And if you look at it carefully, which years are leap years? It's right there, it's listed. Year 3,
six.
Year 6, year 8, year 11, year 14, year 17, and year 19. Is it every other year? Is it every third year?
Sometimes.
It shifts, and that's why the leap year shifts sometimes just 3 years before. Sometimes the leap year is every third year, sometimes the leap year is every second year, depending on where we are in the cycle. And that is what they have here is defined as the Machzor HaKatan, the leap year cycle. The leap year cycle is defined as years 3, 6, 8, 11, 14, 17, and 19 are leap years, and everything else are regular years. We abbreviate that, create an acronym, because we love to create acronyms, by the Hebrew numbers, Gimel, Vav, Chet, Aleph, Dalet, Zayin, Tet, leave out the Yuds, 3, 6, 8, 1 representing 11, 4 representing 14, Zion representing 17, Tet representing 19, and you get this acronym, Goach Adzat. Goach Adzat is the easier way to remember the leap year cycle, 3, 6, 8, 11, 14, 17, and 19, or if you want, you can remember those numbers, whichever is easier for you. I find it easier to remember Goach Adzat, that's your call. Yeah. Oh. I'm glad you asked that question because that's exactly where we are going in the next slide, which is where we are. No, I did not plan that, but that was very good. All right, where are we in the cycle? How do you calculate that? Remember, we had an arbitrary starting point. What was our arbitrary starting point? A year in which autumnal equinox equaled Moled Nisan, and I have a 19-year cycle. So I just have to figure out that starting point to our calendar, which we'll do next week. But for now, where are we in the cycle? How do we figure that out? What's the answer? No.
With
the eclipse. It has nothing to do with the eclipse, but it has everything to do with what year it is. Because we assume the year is from creation. We're going to make an assumption. It's a big assumption, but it's the assumption we're going to work with, that our calendar was created so that it goes back to creation and goes forward to Yemot HaMashiach. It is a perpetual calendar. Unlike these apps that have a starting point where you can't go back past a certain date, our calendar can go back to creation, and it will. And it will go back to before creation, just to make life fun. But we have a starting point. So if we take a given year, any given year, divide the number by 19, you will get a quotient and a remainder. Your quotient tells you how many completed cycles we have passed since creation. And your remainder tells you how many years you are in the cycle. So, if we take, by the way, if the remainder is zero, what year are we? If you take a year and, and the remainder is zero, what year are you? Year 19, what year are you in the cycle? In year 19 from creation, what year are you in the cycle?
Zero.
Your remainder is zero. No, the first year of the cycle is year 1. 19-year cycle is the 19th year of the cycle, is the last year of the cycle. But if you divide 19 by 19, you get a remainder of 0. Quotient of 1, remainder of 0. Remainder 0 means your 19th year of the cycle. Remember, it's modulo 19. Modulo math. Modulo 12, modulo 7, days of the week, modulo 19, year of the year in the cycle. Remainder 0 is year 19. It's the only thing you need to know. After that, your years here, Goach Adzat, are your leap years. So, let's go back a couple of years. Year 5776, which is 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Divided by 19 is?
Take your word for it.
Take my word for it. 304? 304, remainder zero. What does that tell me?
Last
year of cycle 304 since creation. That means that it was a leap year because year 19 is a leap year. So now, year 5777, which is last year, was the first year of cycle 305. Year 5778, which is now, is year 2 of cycle 305. Sorry, of cycle 306. We have finished 305 cycles. We are actually in the 306th cycle.
When is the 5776 divided by 19 is example 304.
So all these numbers are wrong.
No.
The 304 remainder 1.
Cycles in
5776. So 5777 is 304 remainder 1. So my numbers are all wrong. It's fine. It's fine. It's just this number is wrong.
Well, the remainder is important.
Correct. Remainder 1, remainder 2. Now next year, the remainder is going to be 3, which means be a leap year. And I can tell you where we are in the leap year cycle. Year 3, we've started a new cycle. We started a year, new cycle. We are going through them systematically. We're in year 2, then we'll be in year 3, then we'll have 2 years of that leap year, then another leap year, then a year, and we can go on from there. Yeah, 304 remainder 1. And my numbers are all off. That's okay. But you get the point, right? Okay. All right. We are drawing to a close. So I'm about 15 minutes past where I had meant to be, so I apologize. But let me just give you a summary of where we're at and where we're going from here. We have two or three unresolved questions. Unresolved question number one is epsilon. What do I do with the 1 hour, 485 parts at the end of that 19-year cycle that got left over? Remember that chart was a little bit left over that wasn't quite 0.0? That will accumulate over time. What do I do with it? This is more complicated. There was a year in there that was... I'm going to skip this piece. Is there a hypothetical year when Molad Nisan is equal to Tkufat Nisan? That is remains to be seen. There is a more precise way to calculate all of this, which is to work off a more accurate definition of the solar year. Remember, a solar year is 365 and a quarter days is an approximation. It's the number that the Julian calendar used for centuries. We know it to be inaccurate. So there's another way to calculate this, which was what Rav Ada had suggested, And rather than working off 365 and a quarter years for the solar year, start from the beginning, work off 19 years, add up the total number of solar of lunar months in 19 years, divide that by 19, and make that the length of your solar year by definition. You have no remainder. Problem with the Tkufat Ravada, literally, you take the 235 months in a leap year, in a 19-year cycle, 7 leap years, 12 regular years, 235 months, divide times the length of a month, divide by 19, and you come up with this number for your solar year. A more accurate number, but not quite accurate to modern-day precision. That gives you a sense of the accuracy. The accuracy of Ravada's calculation would lose a day every 216 years versus the accuracy of Shmuel's calculation, which loses a day every 128 years. The actual Gregorian calendar, which we are using today in the solar year, is also off a few seconds and loses a day every 3,000 years. This is the standard length of time in the solar year. Today we can calculate it, but again, Chazal worked off the length of a month. They did not have a Masoret to the length of a year. So they had to assess it, and the accuracy was based on scientific knowledge at the time. The advantages are clear. The disadvantages are that it uses a much more complex set of numbers to calculate. And so there was a decision that when it comes to the solar year calculations, our calendar, you remember that Molad, that chart that I showed you with the three-digit number? They did all the complex calculations for us. All that's based on Tkufat Ravada, on a much more precise calculation of the solar year. Anything left up to the people, calculation of Talumata, Birchas HaChama, anything that the masses, the Amcha, need to be able to know, they left as Tkufat Shmuel, knowing full well that our calendar will lose a day every 100 years. Which is why, famously, Talamata shifts every century or so. December 4th, December 5th, December 6th, which is why it's not 60 days after the autumnal equinox. Autumnal equinox is about 14 days off from when the Jewish calendar calculates it. They assumed that by the time this would become a major issue this year. So they did not bother correcting that little inaccuracy. And that is the summary of today's presentation. Those are all the numbers. You don't have to memorize any of it, but that's the numbers that we discussed today. Tkufat Shmuel, Tkufat Ravada, the length of a molad, the length of a molad shift, the annual molad shift, the annual Tkufa shift, and the Machzor Katan. The most important thing we did today is calculate this number here, which is the Machzor Katan. Next week, Bezrat Hashem, we will start to look at the intricacies of the calendar itself, months, days, 29, 30, variable months, how they work. Lynette, this was the longest lecture of the series, so I apologize for going over time. We'll try to keep it down to an hour and a quarter. Thank you.
Thank you.
Question. You know, I spoke a long time ago with one rabbi, and he said that actually when Moshe was in Shemayim, Hashem gave him a calendar from the time when they met until Mashiach comes and said, so what is necessity for this if that's true that Hashem gave?
He didn't give him a calendar. He gave him what I showed you. He gave him. That's the source of it. He gave him the length of the Molad month, the Masoret of the length of the month, as best that they could understand it. From that, they had to build a calendar. But the up until the year 300, we had Beit Din declaring when Rosh Chodesh was. So, but they had a calculation.
Getting the wrong information, but
okay, but it was just a way of looking.